The statement is that if anything happens at any point in the universe, it has an effect on every other point in the universe. Our talk today is I Know That I Know That I Know The Divine In Me Knows All. This is Dr. Herbert L. Byerly, Dean of the University of Healing, University of Philosophy, here in Campo, California, with the Absolute Philosopher. The statement is that if a drop of water falls anywhere in the world, it affects all the world. It reverberates everywhere in the world. And that if a person does something good, it reflects everywhere in the world. If someone does something bad, it reflects everywhere in the world. Now, I'd like to take exception to this. Nothing affects anything else in the world. Scientists will come up with this conclusion very shortly, but nothing affects anything else. One vibration here does not affect the vibrations of the entire universe. We try to say that it does, because we like to think that there's continuity, conformity, there's oneness, and so forth, but there isn't. There is only oneness. There is not oneness of vibratory powers here and there and everywhere. There's only oneness as all exists as it is, and that nothing affects anything else. Now you say, well, my goodness, that's not anything like we've been taught. We've been taught that, any remark or any act that we make or anything that we do in any way affects the rest of the world in some wonderful way. And it doesn't. It doesn't. Now, we either believe our philosophy or we don't. And our philosophy says all already exists. All already exists. There's nothing new under the sun. If you are going to buy a car, that car already exists. That car already exists in your life. It already exists in your consciousness. It already exists. And it's a total. And the length of time you have that car already exists in your consciousness. It already exists. There's nothing new. You reveal the truth. You do not manifest it. You do not demonstrate it. You demonstrate it, yes, but you reveal it. Now, and you see, this is the difficulty about philosophy. Philosophy is not very forgiving. If you say all exists, then how are you going to create something? You may reveal it out of the nothingness that it already is there. It already exists. It is a concept that already exists. And the philosophical concepts of all these things exist. Now, are we going to say that the relative reverberations of the world affecting this, that, and the other thing around the world is a universal concept? Now, could you say that you are standing in the middle of downtown New York and busy traffic going everywhere, everything going, the entire city blew down and you remained untouched? Could that happen? Certainly. But is it conceivable? It's really incredulous to think in that way because we do not dream in that way. We do not think in that way, but yet that is what happens. That's what happened to the one man in Hiroshima who walked out of the center of the atomic bomb explosion there. Now, unbelievable, unreasonable. It defies logic. It defies reason in all kinds. But it's true. Now, we say that one act, one place affects the entire universe. And I take umbrage with that. I say, no, that's not true. It affects everything if we think it affects everything, but it doesn't really affect everything because everything's already been affected. You understand? Everything has already made that next move that that effect might have brought about if you thought that brought it about, but it's already done. It's already done. Do you know that the beginning of the world and the end of the world is already here? It's already a fact. It already exists, and there's nothing to be frightened about or nothing not to be frightened about. Because our eternality, our existence of physical form and non-physical form already exist totally. The length of time that it exists, it's already there. Now, I ask you the question, how long does our beingness exist? What's your answer? Eternally. Yeah, your answer is forever. So therefore, how about the earth? Does the earth exist forever?
Yeah.
Yeah. How interesting. So if the earth has an end, when is the end of forever? You know, when does forever have an end? Well, that's a timeless thought. That's a timeless thought. You see, when we start thinking these type of thoughts, then we will stop thinking that we are manipulated by our universe, we're manipulated by conditions of our world, we're manipulated by our thoughts, we're not manipulated by anything except the fact that we think we're manipulated. When we say, I know that I know that I know the divine in me knows the answer, it already does. This is merely a truism. It's something we're bringing to our attention because we want to have our attention on that particular thing. Now, Seville has a church down in Oweri, down in Nigeria, and in her church are people like in every church around the world. People in every church around the world think that their way of presenting the Bible and presenting the teachings of that religious philosophy is the best way. And these people are very wonderful. But all of them think that they want to build a church so that somebody else can come to it. And because they want to build a church so that somebody else can come to it, they're not building a church that represents their philosophy of who they are. Now, are you going to have a church so that other people are going to come to it? Or are you going to have a church because it is your outpicturing, your reflection, and you think it'd be kind of fun to have a few other people who think like you do sharing the thoughts together? And if you have two or three people, great. You have 2,000 or 3,000 people, great. It doesn't make any difference. But if ever having a church, if ever doing something in the outer is work for you, forget it. If ever you are doing something that's not 100% harmonious with what you believe, what you are, forget it. You're doing the wrong thing. Because if you're doing the right thing, it's all in harmony. Everyone who comes here says, hey, this is just what I've always been looking for. This is what I've always wanted to know about. Tell me all about this, you know. People come to my seminars, they come to my lectures around the world, and as they do this, they say, wow, this is what I've been looking for all my life. 5 or 10, not the whole bunch of people who come to the lecture, 5 or 10, but maybe 3 or 4 come up and tell me, see? And 5 or 10 maybe feel that way, but 3 or 4 come up and tell it, and the ones who come up and tell me, they say, I don't know what it is, but this is my belief. This is what I espouse. This is what I live. I like that. And I say, because it's you speaking to you. It's you talking to your own inner awareness of who you are. Everything is already, I hate to say the word, predestined. But everything is already done. However, we do not have to do it done like it was done. Everything exists. This house, this car, this people, this here, and this that. And we know it in this rotation, A, B, C, D. Now, do we have to do that? Can we go to D and then back to A and maybe just to C or something? Can we switch around? Can we vary our attitudes? Can we vary what we want to do? Yes, we can. We can have it any way we want. And that it already exists is true. That it exists in that rotation somewhere, it does. But for us, it exists in the rotation that we give it. So, if you want to change the world and have people be born old and die young, you know, run their cycle that way, great, that can be done. If you want people to live eternally on a beautiful, blessed level of awareness and brilliance and beauty and harmony and what have you, that you can do too. Now, why do you play the other game? Why do you play the other game? Because you came to this life and you know, whatever your parents believed is what you took on. And you you were far better than anything your parents could have ever been, because you are not only the expression of your parents' bodies, but you're the, and minds and spirits and genes and chromosomes, but you're the expression of your own, because you came with a whole fresh pot of gold, you know, and you're ready to spend it and enjoy it. But the thing is, they tell you you haven't got any money. They tell you you're poor. They tell you you haven't got any, and you say, I'm healthy. No, you're sick, you know. Interesting, isn't it? We listen to the world, and we think that's the truth for us. And it doesn't have to be. It doesn't have to be at all. That's why I'm so happy with little children who realize that they're divine and they're wonderful and live that way, you know. Now, I've seen many little children who are inhibited. And because they're inhibited, you know what happens? They never become the great beings they can. They never become the great beings they can. Now, in Sylvia's family, there were five children. Now, did each child reveal the maximum potential they had? No. Because each child felt they had the limitation of the family that they lived in. They had the limitation of the education they had. They felt the limitation of the, we were just a middle class family. We weren't a wealthy family or a poor family. We were middle class, so we won't descend below middle. Now, if you've been wealthy, you'd say, we don't descend below being wealthy. You know, that's not bad. But you see, it's consciousness. It's consciousness. Now, what if you could have been adopted by a wealthy family? You'd come up with the same attitude, wealthy consciousness. You know, unless your parents told you you were adopted from a poor family, you know, and they would downgrade you and make you think poorly of yourself. And it's not that you are poorly and you were poorly, and not that you're rich or poor or middle. It's that your attitude, whatever it is, puts you wherever you are in your life. Now, what do you want to be? You see, Ellen was raised by a family that had sufficient money. They weren't poor, but they were raised during the time of the war, and they were raised at the time they had to make every little penny count. And every little penny had to go where it's supposed to go, not because they didn't have it, but because if they put the dog on too much, the neighbors would say, well, why don't you help us a little bit, you know, because we're struggling, you know. And they never struggled. They always had sufficient. They always even had help. They had maids and they had other people in the house, you know. But, and yet Ellen could not see herself as a spending lady. She could not see herself as a spending lady because her father had taught her to be very cautious on the spending of money. And so that cautiousness just got into her beingness, and rather than being an abundant woman, having the ability to do anything, anywhere, anytime, she was always just a little bit hesitant about spending money and hesitant about living well and beautifully. Now, that's true of all of us. All of us have that little attitude that we go through of being afraid to spend money and being afraid to do these things. That's silly, isn't it? But we were raised that way. And since we're raised that way, what happens? That's the way we live. Now, you don't have to. You don't have to be affected by anything else that goes on in the world. You go in your own world. You go in your own attitude. You go in your own life. And you breathe your own air. And you do your own thing. And you dream your own dream. Now, why do they have think tanks? They have think tanks to get people away from the stink tanks. The think tanks make people think. The stink tanks make people think that they're poor, and they can't. Now, this is, and think tanks are where dreams are coming true. Dreams come out of think tanks. One person thinks a thought, and the other person says, oh, yeah, now we could do this. And then somebody says, oh, hey, but this could be even worked in there. And that could, and pretty soon, they've got a whole situation going that's absolutely marvelous for a new software, or a new program, or some new stuff in life. It's just fantastic. But it's all a matter of thinking freely, openly, and knowing you can do it. Now, you see, another thing about the people in the think tank, I'm having a wrestling match here with my dog. He's boxing with me here. Now, another thing you do with a think tank, yes, I know, you want to play. Another thing you do with a think tank You don't have to pay the money to have the project put in motion. You don't have to do the R&D, the research and development. You just come up with the idea. You come up with imagination. Now, my son would be great on that. He's good on developing ideas, and he's good on not only developing ideas, but also putting them into progress, you know, into motion, and creating the ultralight airplanes that he makes and the engines that he makes and stuff. But the thing is, he would be so much more if he were free to go on and think all the other things he's thinking and develop them and let somebody else do the R&D, carrying out the details. See how wonderful that is? A think tank is an opening for magic to just flow. And in a small way, it was done. Companies today have realized that if they can encourage their employees to come up with new ideas and new suggestions and get credit for it, and maybe even get a few bucks for the idea at the initial stage, they're going to do it more often. And they do. And this is what the Japanese have been quite famous for doing, and many German firms too, that they have their think tanks, they have their people who say, hey boss, I got an idea. I think it might improve this. Well, my nephew, my grandson rather, worked for a welding company doing clean welding, which was used in hospitals and stuff like that. So it had to have very clean type things, no bacteria in it or anything. And he was in charge of going to each of the welding departments and making sure that their equipment worked right, making sure that the things they were doing were correct. And he was just in his early 20s. And so he went to each department. And when he went to the department had to close down for a day while he did his work. And then he went to the next department. And that closed down for a day. And went to the next part, and that closed down. It had to, because he had to do his work. So he told his boss, you know, boss, if you'd buy me this equipment, which is the stuff he used in each department, and let them bring their stuff to me, you could save, you know, 50%. Because then I don't have to be moving around, and I don't have to shut the department down. They can go on with their programs, and I just do the checking work, the inspecting work, the correcting work, if it need be. And boss, I guarantee you that if you set me up that way, within a very short time, you'll recognize that your profit margin will jump. And so the boss did. He said, okay, I'll believe you. Sounds logical. And he put it in motion, and the profit margin jumped. Jumped right up through the ceiling. And then came the market drop, and he lost his job. But his idea had saved the company, you know, thousands and thousands of dollars every single month. And because he was at a certain level in the organization, he had to be dropped. You know, they cannot drop other people. They have priorities or seniorities and stuff like that. But he's a think tank boy. And if he could somehow be put to work someplace where he could think and come up with his imagination that he has, he's fantastic. He could be wealthy as could be if he's paid for what he thinks about. And Bill Gates makes millionaires out of everybody because he gets them thinking. And he says, now let's take that idea, and now you think of some more ideas. We'll put the people to research and development on that to make it come. You see, when we say that these things are already there, the think tank people were to say, I know that I know that I know God in me knows the answer. I know that I know that I know the divine in me knows the answer. They would know it every time. And it would be done. And it'd be beautiful. And it is, you see? It is. It's fantastic. So, you can say them. And just remember, there is no straight line. Einstein proved that. The network of the universe, the interplaying of the universe, is a bunch of hills and valleys. You've seen the pictures of it in scientific magazines and what have you. Okay? Now, the shortest distance between two points is not a straight line. It's an arc. Now, that's interesting. And we say that doesn't seem reasonable or logical. Well, that's because we are still back in Galileo. We're still back in the days when they were worried about gravity and they were worried about what is first. Does the Earth revolve around the Sun or the Sun revolve around the Earth? Is the Earth the center of all, as some scientists and the Pope thought, or not, you know? So, you see, when we get away from that ancient, archaic, limited thinking that what we do affects everything in the universe, then we are still manipulated by the universe. But when we come to the realization that everything already exists, we reveal it by our thought, and we can reveal it now or later. Edison revealed the light bulb on Wednesday, and another fellow in England revealed the light bulb on Friday, and another person in France revealed the light bulb on Sunday, you see? And each of the other two was too late to get the credit for revealing it first. But it's the same light bulb. It was the same concept. They just were a little slower putting it out. And Edison was slower putting out things too. Other people got it first. But that's just the way it is. Who's to say where it's supposed to start, where it's supposed to end, what it's supposed to do? We've got some beautiful names of inventors, of creative, inventive people, and you're one of them, and I'm one of them. And isn't it wonderful? I tell you, life is great, and we are the great ones who made it so. Have a lovely day, and know that I love you, I love you, I love you now. This is our 11-day spiritual retreat, concluding on July 9th here in Campo, California. And starting tomorrow, Seville will be on her way back to London and Nigeria, and we will miss her very dearly here on campus because she's been an inspiration and a love. And the purity of her heart and her soul is so great and so glorious that it's just absolutely unbelievable, because she doesn't have a unhappy bone in her body. And if we could all say that about ourselves, how wonderful that'd be. So, Seville, have a happy journey home, and the rest of you, happy thinking. I love you.
Love you.